Do you remember Niall Quinn scoring a header from behind the goal? It was against Newcastle. It was sort of like, it was like he literally put spin on it. It was that 3-0 where Keith Curl had a fight with
a Spreer.
Yeah.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. Get involved with the debate by tweeting at Blue Moon Podcast and check out exclusive interviews on bluemoonpodcast.com. It's your club and this is your show.
What's the best way to solve a defensive crisis after a shock defeat at Norwich? A solid 3-0 away win in the Champions League, of course. It's been an eventful week and one that must make Pep Guardiola rue his decision to move Eliaquim Mangala out of the club last summer. That said, even with one fit senior centre-back in the squad, the manager has options. Options that might get a run out as City start their defence of the League Cup next week. Before that, though, we've got the match with Watford to preview and we'll be looking at the talking points from the last 7 days, including hearing how some City fans deal with those unexpected defeats. Howard Hawkins on his soapbox later in the show. Plus, we've got your questions in Ask the Panel, so get them sent in for next week at Blue Moon Podcast on Twitter or through the website, bluemoonpodcast.com. I'm your host, David Mooney. With me in the studio this week, we've got City fan Gaz.
Hiya.
And we've got Goal.com's City correspondent, Jonathan Smith.
How you doing?
Not too bad, thanks. You both well. First show of the season for you both.
Not bad.
Yeah?
No, not bad.
John's one question behind, I think, all the time.
That's a Ronnie sketch.
Yeah, it'll make an interesting show, I think, for if nothing else. Let's start with the game at Norwich. There's only one place to start, really, John. The defence. What did you make of the mistakes that were made?
Well, I thought there was only one massive mistake. If that's any positive to take from it, Otamendi's obviously that was an absolute shocker. But no, they just look very disorganised. And it's not great to see John Stones like that. You know, he's a fantastic player. He's got everything to be a brilliant centre-back. And when he's on it, he is a brilliant centre-back. But it's just confidence just seems so it's quite low. He had a poor summer with England. He had a poor end of the season with City. He wasn't getting in the team. And it just seems to be rolling on. And he always needs a run of half a dozen games where he plays well and nothing goes wrong. And then he's tough his game and... At the moment, I can't see where that run of games is going to come from. Well, obviously, he's injured now. Otamendi doesn't look comfortable on the left side of defence, so yeah, this didn't work well at all.
What? I mean, it felt not right from the start, didn't it, Gaz?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't think Stones. I thought Stones was like the best of the back four. Definitely, I felt a bit sorry for him because they kept seeing someone to sort of bring the criticism round to him, but I don't really think anything was particularly his fault. And yeah, like John, I only thought there was like one really massive rick, and that was obviously Otamendi just sort of having a huge brain fart. And but even then, it's not like, I mean, Otamendi's got areas wrong with his game, but one thing he'd usually trust him to do is just to be able to play the ball out because that's what he's good at, and he just got caught on it. The other two. I just sort of think like there's been so much analysis, but like sometimes you just concede good goals, and we just conceded two good goals that day.
That near post though, it's.
But I genuinely I've got a thing about that goal. But I always think that's the perfect corner. Like, you know how people complain about corners not getting past the first man? That's because the best place to put a corner is just above, like a fraction above the first man. So that somebody can come in and attack the ball and try and glance on it. And if that gets right, there's nothing you can really do to stop it because you should be like, your defenders tend to be goal side of the person who's attacking the ball. So sometimes, I mean, you see this analysis, but I think it's really easy to sort of like, know a goal's been scored, show a still of the penalty area before it, draw a cross on where the goal's about to get scored from and say, oh, someone should have been there. You can do that every single time a goal
goes. Every goal, yeah.
Exactly, and I just sort of think, like, of course, like, there's something you can do, like, technically, you can stop every goal if you know what's about to happen. But I think if your striker gets the run across the man on the first goal, on the near post, then and gets the header off right, then it's going to be a goal. I mean, the only thing you can do to stop it is to have someone... you know, it's just to cut the ball out, really. And they just managed to get the ball just over the first man. I'm not... If we were to score a goal like that and the opposition were complaining about their own defending, you'd think it was a bit absurd. You'd just think, well, it's a good goal, give some credit for it.
OK, then. Well, Norwich's second goal, John, it was a pretty failed offside trap. Walker was very deep.
Well, it wasn't that Walker was deep. It was everyone else was very high. And he was behind them.
Same thing, technically.
Well, no, because there's so much space to run in afterwards, isn't it? You don't have to play a particularly great ball. You just need to knock it past them into a huge area, too far away from Edison, because, you know, obviously Edison sweeps a long way outside his box. And, you know, they were basically like a yard inside their own half. It was just it was a failed offside line Walker behind everyone else. But I just think there's that lack of communication, lack of leadership in the back four when Laporte isn't there, and obviously Kompany's gone. Otamendi doesn't look, like I said before, doesn't look like comfortable on the left, so he's a bit worried about his own game. You know, he got caught. When he got caught for that third goal, you're sort of thinking, you know, is he in an unnatural position? He's not opened himself up to see. He's completely unaware of what's going on.
Well, I was going to say, Laporte as a left footer would be more open in that position because he wants to play the ball forward. Otamendi's kind of got a turn blindside, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I just think there's just that lack of communication around that's sort of led to, there was certainly the last two goals.
I mean, Otamendi was complaining that he didn't get a shout. He should be expecting that, really.
Yeah, he shouldn't have heard out. It was... Yeah, I mean, that was a mistake. Walker made the mistake to not push out as well. I think I'm kind of more in that it's Walker's fault, camp, because once you go, you've got to kind of go and sort of play offside together. But even so, like, I mean, it's like it's a split second decision. Like the decision he should have made to push out happened so quickly. It's like, yeah, there's a deficiency there, but it's hypercritical to sort of, you know...
Especially
because it was also a good pass and a good goal and a good move. And also, somebody sort of like... I think that might happen to us a bit more this season with Fernandinho not playing in front of the defence, because we might talk about it later. I think Rodri looks like a class act. He's nowhere near as good at screening as Fernandinho is. And you've already sort of seen that. Like, because he got turned, didn't he, for the ball coming in. And I wonder if you've got someone who's a bit more, you know... Who's a bit more of a sort of...
A bit cuter, a bit more savvy to that.
Yeah, he's more of an anchor man, isn't he, than somebody who sort of screens the defence, like sort of that type of player. And you might sort of see teams get into our back four a lot quicker than they used to when Fernandinho was doing that sort of ratting in front of the defence.
Well, John, you mentioned it. The news got worse after that Norwich game with the news that John Stones was confirmed out for, I think it's up to 5 weeks. A lot of people have been critical of City's decision not to go into the market for a defender in the summer, but, I mean, Fernandinho is a perfectly good option there. He proved that in the Ukraine.
Yeah, Fernandinho was always going to be the fourth choice when they missed out on who they were looking at in the summer. And, obviously it's not great that they've had to go to him so early and they've got so little choice, in that Laporte is out until at least January, and that's a huge loss, really big loss, because I think he's as good a centre-half... anywhere in the world, with perhaps the exception of Van Dijk, who has been brilliant for Liverpool. I think Fernandinho will work well there. They lose a bit of height, obviously, and I don't necessarily agree with Gaz on the corners. I think they can. I mean, the Spurs one I thought was bad because it's Lucas Moura, who's not the tallest. And he's kind of a free... He didn't really move towards it and stuff like that. I think that's something City should really be dealing with.
Yeah, that less so. But like the other one, the Norwich one, the guy Norwich attacked it, didn't he, and just got there first.
I thought Norwich were brilliant. I thought they came up with a plan and they executed it perfectly. And one of those plans was, first corner we get, that's where we're going to aim for, because I think that's a bit of an issue for City. And he put it perfectly where they wanted it, and it was a goal. Fantastic.
When it comes to the criticism of City's decision not to buy a defender in the summer, Gaz, has the last week kind of been blown out of all proportion because City lost a game, effectively?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because it's only one defend. I mean, I assume our first choice partnership now is Stones and Laporte, so it's just Laporte who was missing. And like we the goal you discussed, you said about Spurs, which was preventable. Laporte was in the side then, you know, and we do occasionally
concede goals.
Yeah, I mean, we don't concede many. But we just happened to concede 3 on one day, which is why we lost. That's a really reductive way of putting it. So I do, sort of going back to before what I said about Stones, like I do get the impression that there was a bit of a narrative building around it before the game even began, because the commentary kept trying to pull everything back round to John Stones, who fundamentally hadn't done anything wrong for any of the goals. Yeah, I think it was a case of people sort of satisfying the narrative more than anything else.
Are you comfortable with Fernandinho there?
I mean, I've not.
He's only had a game.
I don't really watch
there,
pre-season
so like,
football, well, and so I can't really say how good he is at centre. I mean, there's no real reason why he can't play there, is he? I mean, you mentioned the height, but I mean, that City's answer to that is always just not give away set pieces. Certainly not in our own half. To sort of work against that. I mean, but like. He's a good header, though, Fernandinho. So, I mean, he's not. He's only about 5 foot nine, probably 5 foot eight. But, he gets up well. Yeah, he does get up well and he does head the ball well. So, I mean, it's 4 to 5 weeks. And what worries me more, probably, is the fact that we've got to wait 4 to 5 weeks to get him, you know, to get back. It's like, this is happening to Stones all the time now. And I really like John Stones. But, like, if he's getting to the point where you can't rely on him without him breaking down and going missing for another couple of months, that's where... I'm not too worried about this happening for four to five weeks, but if we've got, you know, if we've only got one established centre-half for most of the season, then that probably would cause some issues, yeah.
Bit thin on the ground. John, you mentioned Rodri coming into the team and doing well and kind of figuring in front of the back four. Have you been surprised how little Fernandinho has appeared, either in defence or midfield this season?
Yeah, he was late back from the Copa America. I mean, obviously, he did well there, and I thought Rodri settled pretty well. Actually, I think he's done a pretty good job. Obviously, Norwich was his least effective performance, but I think Norwich deserve a huge amount of credit because they were very brave on the ball. They shifted it quickly, and they were picking up balls in uncomfortable situations, and they weren't afraid to have it, knocking it around, breaking the press. And City were pressing high up the pitch with their Bernardo, Aguero, and they were getting round them, and it was leaving Rodri a little bit isolated. He was being pulled out of position, but I think generally he's had a good start of the season, and I thought he was excellent against Shakhtar.
Well, you say about Norwich playing well. I mean, in terms of a performance against City, it was that we were talking on last week's show with Chris, the Norwich fan. When City lose, it's kind of like there's a perfect storm of factors, and one of them is that every man on the opposition team plays really well. That was just one of those games.
Yeah, they were fantastic, and the atmosphere was absolutely incredible. They were behind them. Once you get a goal ahead, then you've got something to play for, and they just worked incredibly hard. They were well organised at the back. As soon as they lost the ball, they were back in shape, and they just made it very, very difficult for City to create any space. David Silva. You saw what he did against Bournemouth. He was picking up balls in dangerous areas, and he just couldn't do that against Norwich. They were closing him. They were pushing out of they knew exactly who was doing what. Mm. The defence were pushing up towards him, squeezing the space, not letting him turn. Sterling was having a tough time out on the left. He was switching flanks. Bernardo looked better when he came across, obviously set up the goal. But
I was going to say, I mean, in terms of when City have players that have an off day, you just say, oh well, De Bruyne's not found space, or De Bruyne's not been able to find a pass, or Sterling's not quite on it today. When you've got Sterling, De Bruyne, Bernardo, David Silva, Aguero all having trouble finding space, it's you kind of wonder, is the space actually just being really well marked?
I think it was notable that watching Bernardo, I thought this is the first time I think I've ever seen him have a bad game, and I think he did have a bad game, Bernardo. Aguero had a really funny performance because he was finding space. He should have scored. He probably should have put another one away, really, given the sort of chances which he...
If he scores that header and makes it 1-1.
Yeah. I mean, we finished... I mean, we had the chances in that game as well. That's the other thing. I mean, like you say, I mean, full credit to Norwich, and like, overwhelmingly, sort of like, you know, if you're on WhatsApp with your mates or whatever, every City fan I know was sort of saying, oh, you know, fair play. They've deserved that. But we did... we did have the chances, and we finished both halves really well, I thought. The other problem was the timing of that third goal, because we got right back into it.
Right before half-time. We started the second half well as well.
Yeah, and you'd be sort of like rubbing your hands. Like, we've seen this before with City now, right? We'll go through the gears, and then like they score in the only way which you think you can when you're playing badly, you know, when you're playing well, which is by somebody just having a, you know, individual error, and then they score. But it's a weird one, isn't it? I just think about Aguero's performance, because I thought he did quite well creating chances for himself and being a constant menace, but he should have scored probably at least another goal.
Well, before we get into the nitty-gritty of Wednesday's game against Shakhtar, just looking at the Premier League picture, Liverpool will have a 5-point advantage. It's the biggest after five games. Does that mean anything, John?
Well, no, it doesn't. But the thing is that City and Liverpool drop so few points that it feels like it's somehow relevant. It's bags of time to overturn that, and Liverpool will have a dodgy period. But you know, they lost one game last season, so if they lose one game this season, well,
it's not going to be about losing, though, and it's going to be about drawing. That's draws are the new losses now. It's like La Liga used to be, still is to an extent. But the other thing they've got Chelsea, Spurs, and United before we go to Anfield, haven't they? So
but we also going to Anfield to guarantee 3 points.
Well, I mean, it felt that way last year, didn't it? And then they dropped points to, was it Everton? And then we managed to get it back into
Everton, brought it back into City's hands on its own. But it was the night after City lost at Newcastle, they drew at home to Leicester.
That was it, yeah. And then all of a sudden, once you're in that like sort of buffer zone, you can think, well, as soon as you get back into like one set of results, you think, all right, we're into it, aren't we? Five points seems a bit, it's a bit more of a sort of mental sort of block, because you've only, you know, you sort of need two sets of results to go your way.
The talk is as well, City have to play Liverpool twice, but again, you can't always guarantee on that with City at Anfield. It feels like
can't always guarantee, can never guarantee.
Well, I remember one victory at Anfield in my 31 years of life. So,
well, no, but you could say it's still in City's hands, can't you? If they win every game to the end of the season, they win the title.
Technically, yeah.
I think it's going to be different this year. I thought this at the start of the year. Like, I don't think it's going to be. So, I think we'll both lose very few games, but. Like,
you're expecting more of a 90, 91, 92 point season.
Like, if you look at the summer, all those sort of teams sort of below the sort of top six strengthened, didn't they? So, like, your Everton's, Wolves, who else is around there? Leicester.
Well, Wolves and Watford both
well
look good. No. Bottom two in the league at the minute.
Yeah, fair play. Fair enough. But my point is that I think it's like a stronger league this year, which will mean that teams will drop points more.
Let's look at the performance in Ukraine, because Gundogan was one of those who was heavily criticised for his performance at Norwich, but he really turned it around at Shakhtar.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Gundogan, particularly second half of last season. I thought he was fantastic. He was great in Shakhtar. Perhaps it was a little bit of a surprise to see him picked. Obviously, De Bruyne missed the game at Norwich. So he was coming back in, and you thought maybe he would go with playing alongside David or something like that. But yeah, he worked really well. His goal
it's a very well taken toe poke, isn't it? If you know what I mean.
Yeah, but it was a good run, perfect pass from Mahrez. You know, a great assist from Mahrez. His control and then pass. But you got to take that running pretty quickly into the box, taking it in his stride, finish it. Yeah, a great goal. All round good performance, yeah.
Mahrez as well, Gaz, is really, he's quietly coming into his own this season.
I think he finished last season quite brightly as well, didn't he? Well, certainly the goal against Brighton. He doesn't look out of place. I've always thought people have sort of gone a bit overboard on criticism of him. I think he's looking good. And like, yeah, I thought Gundogan as well last night was like 20 minutes in, you could see, oh, he's well up for this, isn't he? And like John, I really rate him. I think he's another one who gets harshly judged.
Did you honestly think his goal was going to stand, though, when you first saw it? He looked, because it was one of those where he looked a mile offside, but because the ball forward was so much earlier, he was actually like 2 yards off.
I don't know. Maybe I wasn't paying that much attention. A lot of people have said that.
He belted it in, and I thought, oh, that's offside.
Yeah. I mean, I felt more that way when Sterling scored against West Ham, and everyone thought that's just going to get chalked off because of the one that happened earlier. But I didn't jump up anyway, just because, like, I mean, let's face it, like, these Champions League group games are just, like, so... There's so little riding on them. I don't think I...
You're just not a fan, are you?
you hardly... I mean, look, I'm glad we won, but you're not really out of your seat, are you, at any point? So, I think I could have... I was mentally prepared for that goal not to go in and not be too disappointed.
What was the stat that the commentary said? It was something like City have only won kind of like four of their opening day Champions League games.
Four,
like
seven,
that.
Was it something, yeah.
4 out of 7, and you kind of go, well, they've made it out of the groups all but two times, so it's not like, there's no jeopardy.
I remember last year when we lost to
Leon.
It was Leon. I was got Leon and Leon mixed up in the first game. And like there was a lot made of like apathy and, oh, this is because like there was like 40,000 there or something. I remember just I was there. As much as I say I hate the European Cup groups, I'm in the cup scheme, and I just remember sort of overwhelmingly just sort of thinking, it just doesn't matter. We've got 5 games to turn this around. You don't even have to win the group. You just have to come in the top half of a league, and it's seeded, so you play a load of dross anyway. So it just doesn't matter. These games don't matter. The games which matter the least, ironically, are the ones against the other good teams in the group, because you've just got a load of rubbish to play at home after it. It's just. Just a load of bloated nonsense. I'm sorry.
Fair enough. We want opinions. That's
I'm just on a rant here. But
that's what we want.
It's just that those games are just so dull.
Well, that win on Wednesday does make it feel like it's completely finished, completely done with now.
Yeah. You win one away game and then that's it, isn't it?
But the way it's turned out this season, playing Shakhtar first away from home, that's by far the hardest game they're going to have. And they've absolutely won it so comfortably. Mm. I just feel like the other five just turn up.
Little bit of wastefulness in that game, though. You think of chances for Jesus, Sterling, Gundogan had one where he squared it straight to the keeper.
Yeah, there was a few chances. De Bruyne should have scored one in the first half through against the keeper, but
when you still win 3-0, it just kind of yeah. I know what you mean.
There's one where Gundogan and was it Jesus got in each other's way when he got through. He probably should have scored that as well. But no, it doesn't matter.
Okay, I'll stop asking. All right, I'm going to finish the first part with a word on the cameos because Benjamin Mendy made his long-awaited return. It's good to see him back out on the pitch.
Yeah, he's brilliant. You just hope he's. This obviously got to be very, very careful with him. It's been two years now where he's been affected by this, and even in that. Brief sort of, I think it was 8 minutes, wasn't it? He still managed to get right up the pitch and smash in one low cross. I just thought, you know, it'd be typical if someone turned that in. It just seems to, for someone who's so sort of crazy and wild off the pitch, he seems, and some of the things he does on the pitch as well, he's so consistently good at crossing the ball. It's incredible how he seems to find great angles and the pace. And he'd done one of those in 8 minutes, and you go back to the start of last season. Did he have 3 or 4 assists in his first couple of games? And that's what he can offer.
You just kind of hope that now it's about not overusing him, I suppose, Gaz. Just making sure that he's kind of like a bonus for these next few weeks. That makes sense.
Well, I mean, I'll leave that to sound kind of judgment to people who sort of understand sort of physical conditioning, but I suppose. I really like Mendy. He's another one I think gets a bit
of unfair stick.
Yeah, a bit of unfair stick. And like, I think people overstate his deficiencies as a defender for the start. But I think like those balls he puts in are just absolutely brilliant. Like, and you get a few of them every single game, every single time he plays. Like, if you're a centre forward, that's just like exactly what you want. You know. Just
needs a touch. Yeah.
And they're just like daisy cutters, and like they just come right through. And I can't think of anyone in the league who puts a better ball in than that.
Finally, Cancelo came off the bench. City fans have been crying out to see him. What do you make of him? We've barely seen anything of him.
Well, I don't think there's any panic over that. The fact that he hasn't played as much as probably you'd expect yet. Players often take their time getting used to being part of the Guardiola style of play. And it can take some players a season before they get they really understand what's going on. So perhaps with it being a defender and a fullback, he needs a little bit more time to know exactly, you know, where to go. You know, this inverted fullbacks and stuff like that. You know, I watch it and think, he stood over there, and I don't really know why he stood over there. But
of course, you play fullback, don't you?
But you know, the goal against the goal against Brighton, where Walker drops into the centre circle and plays it out wide to Mahrez, and you think, right, I don't know, I can't really understand why a fullback has been told to go and stand there. But it, you know, it worked brilliantly.
It works.
So perhaps Cancelo is just getting to grips with exactly where he's supposed to stand, rather than doing what I did as a fullback, which is, well, mostly hang back on the halfway line. But
hang back on the halfway line with hands on your knees, yeah, sort of thing.
But basically just running straight lines, isn't it, up and down? It's a bit more complicated.
I want him to do one of those party piece kicks we've all been seeing videos of. You know, like, have you seen those?
I haven't seen this.
He does like these passes, and it's like I've seen a few of them sort of on social media that he's done for Juventus. Have you seen his way? He imparts so much spin on the ball. He's sort of literally passing around court. It's like a snooker shot, you know, when you're coming in on the top of a ball and the ball just sort of moves. And there's been a few videos of him doing like these passes for Juventus, and there's a few like City have shared of him doing them in training, of him like literally just like moving the ball around people. Is this
like when players score from behind the goal line?
Yeah, well, there's exactly one of them which he's done in training, which City have sort of shared on their that they sort of put out on their feeds. It's like you think, when you think, oh, I wonder what footballers can like do in 100 years. It's like that. He's just sort of like manipulating the ball after he's kicked it. I mean, I don't know if it's like an intrinsic part of his game or a bit of a part of his
just aching. To
yeah, I want to see him do one. Yeah,
I've never been any good at swerving a snooker ball anyway, so I can't really comment on that. Right, so let's move on, and let's be honest, City don't lose that often anymore. So when they do, if you're anything like me, then you'll be ready to throw a tantrum every time it happens. Are you two bad losers by any chance?
No, I just take it in stride, mate.
Gaz?
Not these days. No.
I see, I really am. Anyway, Tom Green's been looking at how some of us deal with a bad result.
It's not a feeling that Manchester City fans have had to deal with a lot recently, but it's something every football fan can relate to. You know how it goes. You turn up to the stadium full of hope, only to watch things go badly. And what should have been a simple 3 points turns out to be anything but. At kickoff, you're feeling confident. 90 minutes later, you're both angry and disappointed.
I have a vivid memory of being in my seat at Main Road after City had lost. And I was only a child, so it was like late 90s at the earliest. And I just having that kind of sinking feeling, but kind of becoming acclimatised to it and being something that I was used to it happening every time like I went there. And I can clearly remember, I don't know if it was the first song that the PA had on after the full-time whistle, but it was always, the soundtrack was always Wonderwall by Oasis. It's all I could hear. And all the roads we have to walk
are winding. That's podcast host David Mooney remembering how things were when he first started going to watch City. Back then, defeats were 10 a penny. Now, though, they're not. And he explains that means he's become a bad loser.
You would think now, with the players that City have got and the performances that they put in and how often they win, the odd defeat here and there wouldn't bother me. But I actually think it bothers me more than it used to back in the 90s and noughties. I think I used to be able to brush it off quite easily. But now I go into a proper sulk when City have lost.
Others on the podcast team disagree, though. Here's City fan Dan Burke, a journalist with One Football.
I used to let City defeats ruin my weekend, but now they're lucky if I let them ruin my lunch hour. I think I definitely deal with it in a more mature manner than I used to in the bad old days when we lost all the time and were generally hopeless. Of course, it depends on the magnitude of the defeat too. Losing a game away at Norwich in September is a lot easier to take than, say, blowing the chance to win the title in a Manchester derby like we did a couple of seasons ago. I actually think that defeat to United was the last time I had a proper strop after a defeat, but I still got over that one quite quickly.
The circumstances of the defeat matter more now. Losing at Norwich in the fifth game of the season doesn't rule City out of the title race. There's plenty of time to catch up that five-point gap. But it does mean some losses later in the campaign can be more upsetting. This is City blogger Richard Burns.
Last season, when we got beat by Newcastle late January, early February, I thought we'd blown the league then and there. and that hurt, and I was gutted for like the whole of the day after, and I just had a little bit of a sulk on, and I had to, I remember for the podcast, writing a bit of a cathartic blog about how much it hurt.
He says that's why he wasn't too bothered by Saturday's defeat.
It's so early in the season, it's not a defining game, and listen, when we're up against a Liverpool team of this quality, you can't be dropping many points at all, but they're going to drop 5 points over the course of the season. We still have to play them twice. Obviously, we're going to drop more points. But yeah, I'll be honest, I just sort of got on with my evening. In fact, I went to B&Q with my fiancé to buy some paint so we can decorate the dining room.
On Saturday, City lost only their third game in the whole of 2019. Some teams would kill for that kind of record, while other teams would just kill for the odd win here and there. It puts one unexpected result at Norwich into context and means reactions have to be tempered. Here's how Richard Burns says he deals with defeat these days.
Sometimes you just need to sulk it out of the system. A good rant, a few angry texts in the WhatsApp group as City have been rubbish. And one thing that I've got a little bit better at recently is just staying away from Twitter, because there's too many knee-jerk reactions and not very helpful points made.
Dan Burke has similar methods.
When City lose, I often try and do something completely unrelated to football to take my mind off it, but that can be quite difficult in my line of work sometimes, unfortunately. Drinking certainly helps too. And sometimes, you know, talking about the game with your friends and family can be quite cathartic, I think. And I think City fans have always been quite good at the gallows humour stuff. Nowadays, the bar has been raised so high for City that they're not really allowed to lose a game without it feeling like a massive deal, but it's literally impossible to win them all. So, you know, losing is just part of the sport that you have to accept, and the great team's the one who always bounce back quickly from setbacks.
And unlike Mooney, Burns reckons he's mellowed with age when it comes to coping with a City horror show.
I'm older than when City used to lose a lot of games. You know, I was young. I used to have to grow up watching, like many of us, watching United win every trophy around. And also, you know, as you grow up, you have hopefully other things in your life. So it doesn't hurt the same way. This weekend we suffered our first league defeat since January. Now obviously you have the summer break in there, so even if you cut that out and call it one league defeat every 5 months, it's not that hard to take, is it?
Watford on Saturday presents City with the perfect opportunity to put things right in the Premier League before Liverpool travel to Stamford Bridge on Sunday. If results go their way, the gap at the top could be back down to 2 points by this time next week. It's not like Watford have a returning manager with a point to prove and just put in an excellent performance to rescue their match against Arsenal or anything. What could possibly go wrong?
Hi, Colin Hendry, you're listening to the Blue Moon podcast.
Please give us your backing. Patreon.com/Blue Moon podcast.
Tom Green looking at how some of us are sore losers. Just before we move on, we just watched the Cancelo stuff. Yeah, I'm desperate to see him do it now as well. It just looks fantastic. Anyway, Watford and Preston to come for City. As we mentioned in the feature, City have the chance to close the gap on Liverpool. Is this weekend, weirdly, so early in the season, quite important given Liverpool go to Stamford Bridge?
I mean, we can't, you'd expect Liverpool to win because Chelsea aren't very good this year. I mean, although it is Liverpool v Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, you look at their team and you think, you know,
one's clearly better than the other.
Yeah. I'd be perfectly happy to sort of, you know, if we fell further behind, that's a disaster. It's an opportunity, but I wouldn't be putting too much faith in Chelsea getting a result.
Are you already checking Liverpool's results, John?
Well, I was driving down to Norwich with Sam from The Athletic, and we were listening to the cricket, and I was just playing with my phone. And
while you were driving?
No, I wasn't.
You were driving, just had to get that, yeah.
And I said we're not putting it on, but just to let you know, Newcastle are winning 1-0. And it was like, well, I'll just carry on listening to the cricket, because they're going to win, aren't they? So, no.
You're not. No, okay, no. Fair enough.
I assume they'll win at Chelsea. It's going to, when they drop points, it'll be similar to how City drop points in games where
unexpected.
Yeah, I think so, because you know, you look at the record against the top six teams last season. I don't think they really dropped that many points. You know, Liverpool, those draws were against like Leicester, Everton, West Ham. You know, I think they drew United as well, didn't they? So
yeah, but top sides.
I think that playing away means there's more chance of an upset than playing a weaker side. Do you see what I mean? Like, I think the times when you should be sort of contradicting what I said earlier, given that Liverpool are away this weekend. It's those weekends when City are at home and Liverpool are away that I think they're your opportunities.
Yeah.
But like you say, you don't know.
And there's still, you know, 20-odd, 30 games to go. So it's. I mean, looking at that, how tricky is Watford going to be? Because they've had a pretty bad start to the season, but new manager, pretty good performance and result against Arsenal.
Yeah, a lot of people were sort of saying that the Grazia was unlucky to get sacked and stuff like that. But you go back to the cup final. As good as City were, I thought Watford were absolutely terrible. I thought he got it completely wrong in his tactics. And they finished the second half of last season badly, started this season badly. So perhaps a new manager. I mean, Watford, that's the way they work, isn't it? They get a new manager every season who brings in fresh ideas and it's, I don't know, it gives them a bit of fresh impetus and keeps them going. And Gracia took them to the first cup final, so they thought, well, we better keep him.
He'll be back next year, won't he?
Yeah.
And so that's how it works here. They flip-flop through the season.
He was great for the best part of a year. And then he was terrible for the second bit of it.
But you'd say the same for Flores and you'd say the same for Marco
Silva.
Yeah,
so. Flores will come in, people start working harder, they'll be good for a bit, and then he'll probably gone before the start of next season.
Gareth, do you worry about kind of teams? I mean, we used to worry about teams with new managers and good performances, but a City are at home, so it should just be one of those.
Yeah,
one of those games.
Well, it's not a new manager at the same time, is it? I suppose so. I don't know if the honeymoon period
was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of sort of make an obscure reference then.
You're going to have to now.
Was it Liz Taylor? Who was Liz Taylor married to twice? It was Richard Burton. I don't know what their second honeymoon was like. It might have been dynamite. We'll have to read Richard Burton's autobiography. What was I talking about? Football. So,
football, yeah. That's what we're here.
I don't... Yeah, I mean, City are at home and... we've got like muscle memory of beating them 6-0 and they've got a good result out of the system last week, haven't they, as well? So like all that kind of sort of, I don't think there's any sort of huge hoodoo over it.
It's not just that though. It's 11 wins in a row for City against Watford. The last time they dropped points against Watford, Stuart Pearce was the manager. So it's not like it's...
Yeah, it wasn't the one where he missed a penalty, was it?
Oh no, they've missed that many penalties that season. No, it was they drew one all at Vicarage Road. Right. It was they sent Watford down actually that day.
Noel Gallagher was
in
the home end. And he got a big cheer when he arrived at the away end. Obviously
they've won every post takeover game against Watford.
It'd be crazy to think that City don't win on Saturday. But you probably wouldn't have expected Norwich to. It's not quite at those levels.
Well, I was going to say, City don't often... I mean, it happened last season, but City don't often lose back-to-back games. I mean, I know they've won in midweek, but Premier League games?
No, they don't. And I think Pep will be all over them to... Because of the way the Champions League's gone now, that they can pretty much throw all the focus on the Premier League. And they've got these... decent run of fixtures coming up, and you can just put everything on that and to not drop any more points.
That's the one thing. I mean, I've said this before and I've been on here, but like Pep, like over and above all the sort of really sort of idiosyncratic style he's got for his tactics and all that, his big thing is like you just turn a team into a winning machine and it's about the results, and he never ever lets us follow a bad result with another one. It just doesn't, you know, that's where his sort of
it's happened once, I think it is.
Well, over the last 2 years, it only happened once last Christmas, and then it was like it felt odd. And it's different from when, like, when things started to go a bit sour under Pellegrini and Mancini before him. It's like there's that drift, and he just does not allow that to happen. So I don't think it will happen. I think he's, you know, he's just too good a coach, and this squad mentally won't allow that as well.
We'll come to predictions for that shortly. Preston, the midweek after that, it's funnily enough, the last time they played Preston was just before they dropped points against Watford in the FA Cup that year. Guys, I want to talk to you about the League Cup, because you were tweeting about how the League Cup has more interest in it than the Champions League at this stage.
Yeah, I figured it out. I had to sort of go online to figure out what the dates of things are. And I reckon that the League Cup is more interesting than the Champions League is, up to the point at which the League Cup finishes.
Because and then the Champions League becomes
exactly,
interesting.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, like, yeah. But once the knockouts of the Champions League happen, it's, you know, it's really exciting. But the League Cup's great. I mean, like, people say teams don't take it seriously, but all the teams that don't take it seriously, they're all gone after a round or so. And then you're into, like, the quarterfinals, and then it's, you know, then you've got sort of big games again. I mean, aside from the Burton thing last year, we got tested more in the League Cup last year than we did in the FA Cup, really.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, City have won it now. What is it? Is it four times in 6 years?
We've won it six times, haven't we?
It's been enjoyable to watch those games, on all those games as well, hasn't it? It's been some interesting places to go to, and some watching people like Foden come through, they've had their opportunity in as well. And I completely agree. It's good fun to watch.
I think it's interesting how Guardiola will set up for this one as well, though, because you kind of get the feeling like there'll be some opportunities in there for the likes of Foden, maybe Garcia as well, in defence, the way things are going. But Preston, fifth in the Championship, started the season quite well, so it's not a gimme of a game.
No, I think this feeds into it. I think this is actually going to be a really great game, because I think Pep will make changes, and possibly could be Garcia, maybe not Howard Bellis just yet, I don't know. Whether Mendy starts or Angelino, we've not seen him at all. So he'll make changes. And I don't know anything about Preston, their team, but they're fifth. So there you go. They must be all right.
That's why we get you on for that expert analysis. And
my pleasure.
Yeah, Gaz, it's
you're not going to ask me about Algo Preston.
I'm not. No, you're all right. I'm going to ask you about City in the League Cup, because the last time that City lost a League Cup game was just a month under 3 years ago. So I mean, the City have got a great run in the competition, and it's just like, what is it about that competition? Why have we kind of suddenly adopted this as it feels like? It feels like it's more important to City than anybody else. Does that make sense?
I mean, I suppose we've kind of had the luxury of being able to treat it seriously, because we've got, you know,
the squad
quite a dense squad. We don't lose many games, period. So, you know, we're going to be in the later stages of stuff. And yeah, you know, there's a bit of good, you know. Well, not necessarily good fortune, but maybe a sort of slight coincidence that we've had such a good run in it as well at the same time. I think the fact that you can get such a good rhythm going in that competition as well, if you want to sort of take it seriously, sort of helps us get good results in it as well, because it's all done and dusted by spring, isn't it? And there's always like things that Pep probably wants to try out and sort of use that competition for. And we've never used it like, you know, how like Arsenal used to use it, where they'd literally like just field like
11 changes,
17-year-olds or something like that. We've never really used it like that. It's like Foden needs a game, but he needs blood in. And I think this is always the right way to do it, actually. If you've got like a lad like Garcia or Foden, there's no point seeing how they do in a youth team, in a first team match. You need to put them in a system and see how they get on with players at that level. And that's kind of the approach which he's sort of taken to it. And it's worked. When your second choice centre forward is like Gabriel Jesus, you know, you're always going to be.
You do all right,
aren't
you?
Yeah.
Let's touch on Foden, because Johnny's barely played this season. Fans have been crying out to see him, and you know, there was the whole thing, you know, at the start of the season with him and Guardiola, where Guardiola said he should be banging my door down, that sort of thing. You know, where is he? Where's he been? I mean, he was ill in midweek, I believe, so he wasn't available for the Shakhtar game, but still.
Well, a bit like Cancelo, it's difficult to get game time at this time of the year, when the first four games of the season they're only playing once a week, and Pep wants to give game time to, you know, he's what would possibly be his first 11. You know, De Bruyne, Bernardo, David Silva, Gundogan, Rodri. So it's difficult for Foden to get opportunities, but obviously it's frustrating because he needs that time. I mean, the Brighton one was his opportunity, and you thought 3-0, an hour gone, the subs are all warming up. You think, well,
this bring
is,
him on.
Yeah, give him a rather
a
give
run,
him
yeah.
He brought him on in the 89th minute and things like that. And in the Community Shield, I think he came on in injury time, didn't he, or in the 89th minute? And you think it's kind of not even worth bothering that. But there was a chance to give him half an hour, and then he brings on Bernardo, and then 15 seconds later, Bernardo scores. So that doesn't help his cause, does it? And then, yeah, these injuries now, I think that also knocks him back a little bit. I know they're not midfielders that have been injured, but he needs to go with his most experienced players to get through this. So, no, it's not great, but I think when they start playing twice a week, people start picking up niggly injuries, or people are playing four games on the trot, and it's time to take someone out. His chance will come. He's not the first choice yet, but he's still going to play, I don't know, 20 games this season. I think he'll start 20 games this season and appear in 30, 35, 40.
Right. Well, still no winners on the charity bet for this season. Two more attempts this week. William Hill has given each of us a £10 correct score single, and the winnings are going to the Christie Cancer Hospital in Manchester. Gaz, we'll start with you. What have you gone for Watford?
3-0.
3-0 is 6-1 and 60 quid if you're right. John?
4-0.
4-0 is 15-2. That's 75 quid if you're right. I've gone in between you and gone 2-0. So we're 13-2 if I'm right, and 65 quid. Preston,
we've all thought that. Hang on, he's going to concentrate on getting the clean sheet.
Yeah, we have. Yeah. It's which means Watford will score inside 30 seconds, and then we'll all be out. What have you gone for Preston, Gus?
3-1.
John?
2-1.
And I went for 3-0. So there's something in there. We've not got the odds for the Preston game yet, so we have to keep an eye on our Twitter feed for that. Remember, to gamble, you've got to be 18 or over, and that prices can change. If you'd like more on responsible gambling, head over to begambleaware.org. It's now time for Howard Hocking. He's explaining why being a City fan is so much fun.
Admit it, I'm spoiled. I mean, how can I not be when the football team I support has secured 198 points over the last two football seasons, when they won a domestic treble for the first time in their history, when the past decade has seen my team win its first trophy in over a generation, and its first top tier league in 44 years, then won it another three times and added another FA Cup and just the four League Cups for good measure, when our last league defeat was followed by a 15 game winning streak. Spoilt is what I definitely am. I, and others, won the lottery on September the 1st, 2008, and have been dining out on it ever since. I've even stopped shopping at Iceland and Quality Save. There's a downside to being spoilt, though, because it makes losing a lot tougher to handle. Very tough when your last league loss was 8 months previous. I wasn't much better at handling defeats when we were rubbish, to be honest, which ruined many a weekend. But nowadays, a defeat leads to inquests, the rewriting of history, and suddenly the forthcoming fixture list looks twice as hard as it did last week. After all, if it happened once, that defeat, then it could happen 100 times. And thus, after one game and one more injury, the squad is full of deficiencies, the team is down to the bare bones, and there were damning questions to be asked about our transfer business during the summer. All because the previously ill Nicolas Otamendi dallied on the ball and we messed up playing an offside trap. Hence the game against Shakhtar Donetsk suddenly becomes the well-worn must-win game, despite the fact it's obviously not a must-win game, as shown by City losing their opening game of last season's Champions League campaign and qualifying with ease. In fact, despite losing our opening game, we were top of the table after just three games. The problem is that the intense competition with Liverpool means that defeats cannot be afforded very often if we have designs on once more winning the league. So defeats must be avoided, and any that occur are catastrophic. Without Liverpool in the league, the reaction to defeat would have been much calmer and shrugged off at the weekend against Norwich, and we'd still be top and few would have perceived it as particularly damaging. The extra problem with City is that the defeats tend to come when you least expect them. Now, it sickens me to say this, but I must. That is why I would defend, partially at least, the way some United fans have struggled to cope with not being top dog anymore. I know a lifelong supporter or two who are close to giving up their season tickets. The excitement is not there anymore, being the reason why they want to quit. The spark has gone. Now, it's easy to laugh at such a lack of support and deride them for such an approach. You take the rough times with the smooth and all that. We did. You don't give up when the going gets tough, and 100 other cliches. But if I was a United fan, and by rights I should be, as my dad is, then I'd be pretty frustrated too, and wondering if I could spend my money in a more productive manner at weekends and the odd midweek. I do understand it. For many United fans, they've known little but success. If their wealth and size was appropriate for a team in sixth or thereabouts, then I'd mock such a lack of support. But United have been run with such ineptness and incompetence for at least 6 years now, that it make the likes of Peter Swales look like Bill Gates. The owners leech half the profits away, the stadium ages along with the supporters, and put that all together and they have every right to think that this is not a good way to spend 90 minutes, week in, week out. It's no point comparing their lot to that of your Rochdale or Bury fan. Their situation, expectations and capacity for success is on another planet. Our reactions as fans to how much we support our team and how much we criticise them is all relevant to where the bar is set for the team. Nevertheless, such a situation would never stop me being a fan of that team, though. You can never change that. It might just change my attendance record. And you just can't compare the situation at United to City's and us having healthy crowds when we were at our lowest ebb. We knew no different and had nothing else to cling on to. We always had hope, though, that better times are around the corner. If we'd known what the future held, I bet many of us would have given it up. The only way a comparison can be made is if City stutter for a number of years like United are now. Then we'll see what the support is made of. I hope we never have to, and we shouldn't. After all, if a single defeat to Norwich can call cheeky Gary Stain's tenure into question, how would years in the doldrums affect us, especially in the age of social media? And in a way, United fans know already what the future holds, in the short term anyway, knowing that they are too far behind Liverpool or City to win a title in the foreseeable future. None of us in the old days ever foresaw the balance of power being as it is in Manchester, and that's hard to comprehend and deal with. United fans thought they were made for life, and then suddenly they weren't. I'm confident they can count on your full sympathy for their plight. But anyway, enough about United. But for City, a 3-0 win in the Ukraine, when it should have been 10, has rather put into perspective the level of crisis at the club after a single defeat created a meltdown with small parts of the fan base. City were the only English team to win in the Champions League this week. The media were quick to swat away any recriminations for Liverpool losing away in the Champions League once more. Apparently it would do them good. Shame they couldn't say the same thing about City losing to Norwich. Liverpool lost all three away games last season, two in the group stage, including Napoli, which is why those of a sane mind point out that the league is a true barometer of the best teams, not a cup competition. Never a cup competition. Still, nice to see Liverpool fans catch up with the fact that VAR sucks. Strange how it suddenly occurred to them why that could be. Meanwhile, Spurs were ahead for just over 200 minutes in the whole of last season's Champions League campaign and reached the final. That too is telling. So days on from City's season being on the verge of falling apart, Fernandinho proved that playing in defence is well within his remit, so there's nothing to be worried about. City are back on course for being really great again. A host of other teams are now in crisis mode instead, and the world keeps revolving until we all get a new narrative next week. It was ever thus. But what the team proved in Kharkiv is that they are still a class act. The team are human, just like Chelsea's and Liverpool's were this midweek, and sometimes it just ain't your day. Sometimes you face adversity and obstacles along the way, and buying another two defenders would not change that. But what is a constant now is that this team is a class act, led by one of the world's greatest managers, the greatest. So all in all, despite that torturous 5-hour journey back from Norwich, when it felt like the world had it in for me, we've got a pretty good deal in life being a Blue right now. Benjamin Mendy is once more sprinting down the wing. Gabriel Jesus has a new crap goal celebration. Ilkay Gundogan is once more turning it on in European games, including the classiest toe-poked goal of the season so far. Riyad Mahrez looks like the player we thought we were buying the previous summer. Rodri completed 100% of his passes on the night, and Pep secured his 80th clean sheet as City manager. And unless Edward Wood is buying our players and a championship level manager is leading us into the Europa League, life as a City fan will remain pretty good.
Hi there, this is Joe Royal speaking. You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast, and carry on doing so.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast, but don't worry, it'll be over soon.
Howard Hawking there. It's time for Ask the Panel. Get your questions in on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast. You can email us on bluemoonpodcast.com. And we're on Instagram as well. Just search for Blue Moon Podcast on there. James Curran is first up on the emails. Why are there no City voices commentating on City matches? Listening to Jamie Carragher get excited about City losing at Norwich was bordering on unprofessional. I suppose the kind of the feeling on this is, are you bothered by who commentates on City's games, the ex-pros?
It depends on, yeah, a bit, actually. I mean, I think Sky have allowed sort of Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher to like be sort of characters, like as part of like the soap opera, which is the, like the Premier League product. And it is getting a bit irritating, I think. But more for that sort of aspect of it rather than sort of thinking you need some sort of
drama.
Yeah, or bias. I'm not bothered if like an ex-City player is commentating or not. But I think
the thing for me is I always think with Carragher, I know what his bias is. Do you know what I mean? There's no point in hiding it because like you know what it is. You know he played for Liverpool for his entire career.
Yeah, I mean the problem with Carragher is that last year it was definitely like it was almost like his. This sounds really bitter, and I'm not usually like this, but it was almost like sort of like his personal story as well that season. It almost felt because the thing you got to remember about Sky is that it's like it's first and foremost it's telly, and then second it's sports. They are putting a telly program together, and that's how they've done it. Neville annoys me a bit more because like people think that Neville's even-handed because he'll criticise United, but he'll only talk about United. They're either playing well or they're playing badly. You know, there's not another team on the pitch, so I think that it's just you. I think it just helps if you do sort of take out the sort of bias, the sort of co-commentators with sort of sympathies, because they just, even when they're trying to be critical of their own team, they're doing it from a they're not doing it from a dispassionate position.
Yeah, I mean, John, who would you throw up as the name when they go to Martin Tyler and who is that and for City?
Well, that's the you could have given me a bit of preparation.
But that's the problem, isn't it?
I quite like Niall Quinn when he was doing it. I thought he was okay.
Niall Quinn said stupendous, didn't he?
Yeah, I know quite a few City fans weren't that keen on him, were they?
But the point is, you wouldn't say, and over to Martin Tyler and Sean Gota, because it doesn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but like Jim Beglin isn't like the most exotic name, but like he seems to get work.
I'll take that, all right, yeah.
I mean, just because you were good at... You know, you were successful doesn't mean you're a good co-commentator, as everyone who works for BT Sport could testify. I just don't like listening to any of them, really. They all seem to describe exactly what I've just seen. You know, he's got the ball out wide there and he's crossed it. It doesn't really add anything for me.
I know what you mean. The other thing that I'd like to change about commentary is... Barry Davis used to do this brilliantly, and he just shut up.
Yeah,
if nothing
talk
was happening,
a lot more now, don't they?
If nothing was happening, he wouldn't say anything. He might say the name of the player as he received the ball. That's it.
It does need changing, because I mean, although it's sort of like you can't really think of them doing. Do you remember when Keyes and Gray got sacked, and it was like, oh, it's not going to be. You know, people were thinking that this is going to fundamentally change. You know, it because they were so associated with it. I think, I mean, obviously that's for like much more sort of distasteful reasons, but like, I think Sky needs to do something similar again and just sort of swing the axe a bit and just freshen it all up, because the football should be the entertainment, and it's not a lot of the time now. Like, you've got these little commentators who are sort of part of the show.
Part of the brand.
I think the best co-commentator, I can't even remember his name, he's a Scottish, I don't know, he played for Hibs or someone like that.
Is it Davy Provin?
Davy Provin. Is he played for Celtic, didn't he?
I can't remember.
He's great.
Just thinking Andy Hinchcliffe as well.
He just seems to not want it. Like, I can never remember who he is when I hear his voice, because I remember his name, because it's not about him. Like you say, he just adds a little bit to it.
But flavour.
Yeah.
Final question. Final question from Caroline Hobson on the emails. She asks, how much would Pep want to try a back three? He's attempted it before, but he's always fallen back into that trusted 4-3-3. And I suppose this comes with the defensive issues, the idea that Kyle Walker might push into the middle and Cancelo come in.
Yeah, well, I think it's harder to do a back three when you've only got one centre-half. yeah, Walker can do it. I don't know if Cancelo's done it before. I think it's an option, and
with Mendy fit, does that change things?
I think for those reasons, Mendy being a more attacking fullback, and I think that's probably why it hasn't been used too often. Because when he was fit, it was occasionally they tried it out. So it is an option, but I think Mendy being sort of a reliable 100% back in, you know, there every week is a little while off yet. I think they're just going to take the time with him. So I can't see that happening at the moment. Zinchenko's not that sort of quick attacking full wing back, is he? Angelino, I suppose, could do that, but, you know.
Not seen him.
No, he's
not
disappeared.
I mean, Gaz, it's funny because I always just, with questions like this, I always just think Guardiola, he's surely just tempted to just name players, do you know what I mean? And not actually set out a set formation, because they all move about the pitch anyway.
Well, he'd tell you that anyway, wouldn't he? When you sort of read, like...
Just get more midfielders on the pitch.
Well, like, whenever you sort of read stuff about what Guardiola said, or what even like lots of other sort of top managers say, it's like football managers don't think about like formations and tactics in terms of like...
Who's playing
three
where?
Three or four bands on a pitch. You know, they say it's much more complicated than that, and... You know, it doesn't really matter. I mean, like, it's right, because like, people talk about three and four at the back, but like, often there's not much of a difference, because when a three at the back seems to work well, it's because you've got one of them who steps up into midfield, and then it just becomes a 4-4, you know, then it becomes a four at the back. And I think that's the way, I mean, it's hard for us because we're so ingrained in this, like, sort of looking at a team sheet before a game and actually seeing where those dots are on the pitch, but I don't think managers do see it like that.
No, well, my head fell off when he didn't play a right back against Newcastle, was it, last season? Well, he just didn't name anybody on the right side of the pitch. Or...
No, well, he sort of brought all that in. There was more of that about 10 years ago, like really asymmetric formations. And they sort of moved away from that now.
It really annoys me when a formation's not symmetrical. It troubles me. I can't explain why.
Well, De Bruyne has played almost as a striker at times, but you know, Shakhtar, he was the furthest man forward, and when you sort of if you were drawing a graph of where they were playing, you wouldn't put him as a striker. But he's playing there more than he was in midfield. And last season, when Fernandinho played at centre-half against Arsenal, it was called a false six, was it? Or something like that. Because he was like half centre-half, half... He was midfield when City had the ball and centre-half when they didn't. And it was, you know...
And like when the opposition have the ball anyway, you flex to suit what the opposition are doing. So it's always a bit of a red herring to sort of talk about defensive formations anyway, because you're just reacting to whatever the opposition are doing.
Yeah, right. Well,
scales fell from your eyes.
fair enough. Time's beaten us this week, and we've come to the end of the episode. But never fear, there is more to be heard. If you are a Patreon backer, head on over to patreon.com/bluemoonpodcast and sign up to one of our tiers to get a bonus episode each week. And we promise that it's at least 15 minutes long each time. This week's is about City results that have made you the angriest. If you'd like to listen, you can sign up to the $2 per month tier. If you'd like to be on that show, then check out the $10 a month tier instead. All of that money goes towards making the show, so everything backed really does help us out. Thanks for listening, and special thanks to my guests, to Gaz.
Cheers.
And to Jonathan Smith.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week to look over the games against Watford and Preston. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please support the show. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.